Hello, this is Elodie Reed, digital producer for Vermont Public Radio. This podcast has been edited for brevity and clarity. Yay!
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Governor Phil Scott has proposed using $1 billion in federal stimulus money to make a number of major investments in Vermont's future. I'm pleased to say the governor is joining us now to discuss this and several other key issues. Governor Scott, welcome back to Vermont Edition.
Good afternoon, Bob. Thanks very much for having me on.
Governor, just before we discuss the major financial investment plan that you've put together, we have an update I see from the Vermont Health Department concerning the pause in the use of the Johnson & Johnson COVID vaccine. Can you bring us up to date on what's happening?
Yeah, we're actually waiting to hear a bit more. They had their meeting yesterday. Didn't come to any conclusion, but they have a meeting with us, the governors, this afternoon. And I hope we get more of an update at that point in time. And they, from my understanding at this point, they're not meeting again until next Wednesday. They're gathering information. So we have made the decision to cancel any Johnson & Johnson vaccinations between now and Friday. So that people can make other arrangements. And we're willing to do that. I wanted to stress that, you know, people who are being canceled should call in. That number is 855-722-7878. And we have special appointments reserved for them so that they, and they're not on the website. So they need to call in and we'll get them another appointment with the other Pfizer and Moderna doses.
And is it the goal that folks who have had their Johnson & Johnson vaccine canceled, that they will be able to get an appointment by the end of the month?
Yes. We've reserved slots. And I know that there's been some who have been frustrated, but they've gone either they've gone directly to the pharmacies or they have the gone on the website. And that doesn't recognize that they have been canceled. So you have to call in order for us to make that appointment. So I would stress, if you've been canceled, call that number and we'll be able to get you in fairly quickly.
Governor, you've outlined a plan to reopen Vermont by the 4th of July, and this plan is directly linked to Vermont reaching certain vaccination targets. Is this timetable now in jeopardy if the Johnson & Johnson vaccine pause goes on for another week or two or three?
No, we feel we're in pretty good shape. As long as we don't have any reductions in Moderna or Pfizer, we should be set. I was, as I do with almost everything in my life, take a more conservative approach, and we built in that there could be some bumps in the road, so to speak. Wasn't expecting this one, obviously, with Johnson & Johnson, but I wanted to make sure that we could attain our goals. So at this point in time, if nothing else happens to the supply chain in terms of Moderna and Pfizer, we'll be all set, and we should continue to meet the goals that we outlined.
Governor, the latest modeling information from your administration shows that many of the new cases of COVID involve young people, and the age group from 10 to 24 shows the largest increase. Probably not a big surprise since this group largely has not been vaccinated yet. Another concern is that some of the COVID variants are spreading through this younger age category as well. Does that give you any pause about trying to reopen Vermont schools on a full-time and in-person basis in the next week or two?
Well, again, that was the goal that we outlined. I still believe that our kids are not okay, and we should be getting our kids back in school, but we have to recognize, you know, there are an elevated number of cases due to different variants, the B117 in particular. And I'm pleased that a number of schools have opened. I think there's at least half the schools that are open for full-time in-person instruction. So that's good news. And I hope to see more depending on the situation. So here in this state, we deal with the schools and from the district level. And this wasn't a mandate, as some other states have put into place, but this was a goal. And obviously, things have changed a bit, but I still believe it's best for the students to get back as quickly as possible, and there's still time to do so. We don't typically, school year doesn't end until mid-June, and so there's still time to get them back for at least some period of time to get them back to some sort of normalcy.
I understand it's a local decision at the district level. Are you encouraging districts to go back to full-time in-person?
Yes. Yeah. That would be, again, the same goal that we want kids to get back into school as quickly as possible, understanding that it is a local decision. And I know educators are working very hard, but the data shows us that remote learning is not a substitute for in-person learning and social connection. So, you know, mental health issues are important, and that personal connection is important. And you don't get that with remote learning. So we know our kids aren't okay, and we have to do everything we can to strive towards this in-person instruction. But it's a local decision.
Let's start off with Scott, who's calling from Stowe. Hi, Scott. Welcome to the program.
Hi there. Thanks so much for having me.
What's your question?
Yeah, I would love to ask Governor Scott. So far, the legislature has really taken the lead on solving Vermont's pension crisis. So I'm curious to hear, Governor Scott, what is your plan to solve our pension crisis, and how do you plan to keep our pensions solvent while protecting benefits? Thanks so much.
Yeah, you know, I think it's important to understand we have $381 million that we put into our budget. That was $103 million more than the year before. So we are taking care of our obligations that have been set forth, but we can't continue down this path. As I've said for a number of years, I've talked about this a lot. This is an important issue. Our unfunded liability is over $5 billion now, all in, which means it's grown in recent years. And we continue to pour money into it. So we need to fix this. It has to be a structural type of a fix, and money isn't going to solve this. I was pleased to have the treasurer step up early on to identify this, as I thought that was important. And I also believe that the legislature has to take a leadership role in this. And I've said all along, I'm more than willing to be at the table. I'm ready to offer any perspective that they might need, but they're going to have to lead this. In fact, we've offered to be there. I don't think they have to come up with a separate plan. I think we have to work together in order to get to a point where we can all live with a plan that's being developed. And I know, again, the House took the lead on this. We offered to help out. They didn't take us up on that offer at that point in time. And but we're still willing. Whatever they come up with, we're willing to work on it with them. You know, again, I'm not trying to turn this into a political battle, but I'm a realist, and I know that given the politics and the power of many that have over the Democratic Party, and they're in the majority, they're driving this bus. Anything I propose will be instantly thrown out. And that's just the reality. That's not being partisan. That's just being realistic. Again, the majority needs to lead on this, just like it needed. Just like when I led on guns a few years ago, they need to lead on this issue.
Governor, as you mentioned, the House Democratic leaders did unveil a plan, and it was strongly opposed by the unions, and they withdrew that plan and instead are setting up a summer task force to look at this issue. In their original plan, it increased the retirement age for a full pension. It asked employees to make a larger annual contribution. It reduced their cost of living increases. And it also used $150 million in federal money to reduce the size of that unfunded liability. There are a number of people at the State House who think you would have signed this bill if it had reached your desk. Is that true?
Well, hard to say without having all the details, as you know. That wasn't a bill. That was something that came out of the committee. It didn't have a number. It was a concept and a starting point. So, again, I've been around for a long time. You've been around for a long time. A bill that comes out in conceptual, or a proposal that comes out in a conceptual form without a bill number attached to it, without it coming out of the committee with a vote, without it going to the floor, without it going over to the Senate, has a long, long ways to go before it comes back to the governor for his or her signature. So, again, I have a deep amount of respect for those who've been working on this. I know what it's like to stand up to the political interests of my party when it's the right thing to do. And I think the majority still needs to do more. And it looks like they're moving forward. They're going to put a study committee together. But this problem's not going away, and it keeps growing every year. So we just we need action. Inaction isn't going to cut it this time. And I look forward again to working with them on a solution.
Governor, a number of businesses in Vermont have qualified and received the federal stimulus PPP loans, something that has helped many of them stay afloat during this very difficult and challenging time. There's an effort that these businesses should be taxed on what they have received. What are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, I completely disagree with the legislature on this. I feel strongly the legislature should reverse its decision to insert at the last minute a new potential tax liability on federal PPP loans. I think these were forgivable loans, and they were to help employers survive the pandemic, preserve jobs. I don't even think Congress contemplated that they be taxed. And this is just the wrong approach, the wrong decision. And again, it can be rectified. And they put it in at the last minute in a bill, unfortunately, that is waiting my signature or my action. But it's unfortunate because there's a lot of good things in the bill as well. So I'm contemplating what to do. Hopefully they'll make a decision to rectify what they've done in H315. I don't think a lot of legislators knew it was in there either. Otherwise, there would have been more debate. But the right thing to do is to make sure that they do not impose a tax on PPP loans.
Let's turn to Don, who's calling from Bennington. Hey, Don, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Governor, I believe, and I'd like your thoughts on this, the health department spent $5 million with out-of-state contractors to engage them to make these appointments with COVID. I'm not talking about the drugstores like Walgreens or CVS. I'm talking about the government appointments, which, I mean, I believe that comes out to about $20 an appointment, $20 a phone call. And why wasn't that money spent by the health department, say, in community groups like churches in Bennington and things like that, where they could have really used that money and they could have enrolled their parishioners and all for shots, for COVID shots?
Are you talking about the call takers for making the appointments?
Exactly.
Well, again, as we found with the Labor Department and some of our struggles when we were overwhelmed with the number of people who were trying to sign up for unemployment, we're finding the same thing. People have, and it's a good problem to have because we want people to have vaccinations. We've done it in a strategic way and done it by age banding and tried to be methodical about it. But we need some help, as you've seen throughout Vermont, and you'll hear more about it. Pre-pandemic, we had workforce challenges. We're going to have them again after the pandemic ends, and we're still experiencing it today. We need help. We need people. And There are more, again, from a broad perspective, there are more jobs available right now than we have people to fill them. And there are more jobs available than we have on UI and PUA right now as well. So we try and utilize all our workforce the best we can. We've taken from different agencies and departments to help out, whether it be the labor department or the health department and the emergency operations center and so forth. We're all trying to pull in the same direction, but we don't have all the bodies, and it's hard to coordinate people to come on and be there when they're needed. So I understand your point. It's a lot of money, and I don't know. I can't verify the amount of money it is, but I can tell you that it's needed in order to make sure that we get this right, we get the appointment set up, and we get people the shots in arms. That's our goal, trying to do it as effectively, cost-effectively as possible.
Governor, you've outlined a plan to invest roughly $1 billion in the federal stimulus funds in a number of one-time projects. Just to review those for our listeners quickly, $250 million to expand internet services, broadband, and wireless cell coverage, $250 million for affordable housing, $200 million to mitigate climate change, roughly $170 million for water and sewage infrastructure, and another $143 million for economic development and recovery grant programs for businesses. As you look at this, I mean, $1 billion, we don't often say that word on Vermont Edition. You must look at this and think, boy, this is an opportunity to make some changes in Vermont policy that could totally transform the state of Vermont.
Yeah, this is really incredible. When you think about the whole package, it was, and forget about the CARES money, the money we received before this. This is $2.7 billion total. About $1.7 billion is fairly prescriptive, and it goes to different sectors and is direct to different entities. But there's another billion that is more flexible. And we haven't, you know, to be honest, we haven't received all of the guidelines for that either. They're supposed to get them to us by the first week of May, I believe, out of the Treasury. So we don't know exactly how we can spend it and what qualifies or not. But, it wasn't too long ago where we were fighting amongst ourselves and maybe negotiating over, you know, $1 million. And now we're have this $1 billion that has fallen from the sky, so to speak. So we have this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to make strategic and transformative and tangible investments in priorities that we all share. We know we've had some shortcomings. And again, I think we have to make sure that we do this right. If we don't do this right, we'll look back and say that we squandered this opportunity, because I don't think we're going to get it again. This is an opportunity to fix some of the real challenges we've had over the last decades, I should say. And that's why I've tried to simplify this, putting the money in those five critical areas that I think we all agree on.
You know, you talked about the size of this, $1 billion. Are you thinking that you'd like to have a pretty detailed plan approved by the legislature before they adjourn for the spring?
Well, what I've said is, let's agree. Think of this as trying to build a house, let's say. First, you have some sort of drawing that shows you somewhat what your house is going to look at, a perspective drawing of sorts. And that's what we're laying out with a few details as well. Let's agree first with, do you agree that these are the five buckets that we need to invest this money in? I mean, we talked for years about broadband. And as we found during this pandemic, it's even more apparent that this funding is essential and something that we need to get broadband to every corner of the state, especially in the rural sections of the state. So I think we all agree with that. that this helps people, that helps our kids, and it gets us into the 21st century. As well, when you think about housing, you know, how many times we thought was significant about 3 years ago when we put forward a $37 million housing bond. It leveraged another $65 million for that was at the time the single largest investment in housing Vermont has ever seen. But we knew that wasn't enough. I mean, we've seen where we have to do more. So $250 million would make a significant dent. We would be able to, again, help the homeless. We spent $70 million over the last year for temporary housing. What they need is permanent housing. So if we focus on that, then because we can't continue we did that with FEMA dollars, the $70 million, but we can't continue to do that in the future. So let's use this money to build out housing so we can help not only those who are homeless, but middle-income families who've been priced out of the market, housing for those who are struggling as well. So we could build 5,000 housing units with this money, and I think that that's important. Again, helping people. Climate change. Again, we've had a lot of protests, rallies. We know climate change is real. It's a threat to our planet, but it's also a threat to our economy. So investing this $200 million and giving the majority of it to the Climate Council, because that's what the legislature set up to determine where we're going to spend money in the future. We've had our disagreements on the structure of that committee, but it's in place. Let's give them the $100 million, half of it, to be able to implement. And again, moving forward, our water, sewer, and stormwater challenges we've had in the state. I mean, that's, again, significant when you think about the aging infrastructure and the amount of buildup we need, clean water. Clean water is something that helps people in a real practical sense. And then economic development, $143 million for that, to help those who are still struggling, those struggling small businesses who've been hit hard by the pandemic, so they can rebuild and recover and put people back to work. So, again, this in its entirety is about people. It helps them and it helps us as a state, but it helps people individually in so many different ways.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Scott, who's calling from Brandon. Hi, Scott. Welcome to the program.
Well, thank you for taking my call, and thank you, Governor, for being on the air today. I have to admit that I came in at the very end of the last 5 or 10 minutes of the conversation here, but I think what the comment that I have very much applies to what the governor is discussing. My wife and I moved to Vermont over 20 years ago. I've had a small business in the state of Vermont, and I don't regret for one moment raising our 4 adult children here. But 2 of our adult children have already left, and the 2 that are remaining are planning on leaving this state. We're talking about highly motivated, highly productive, highly educated children and now young adults. And I can tell you that it's not because of opportunity. It's not because of a lack of broadband. It's because there's been a tremendous encroachment on our individual liberties, in my perspective, over the last 22 years since we've lived here. And there are issues that aren't addressed, moral issues and social issues that seem to be something that our state doesn't want to address. And I think it was magnified with the pandemic. We've got family out of the state, as I said, who had a different, much different approach in the states that they live in without the massive government intrusion of shutting schools down and limiting businesses and all the rest of it. And so I would say that the more that our state has crept towards a very liberal philosophy as opposed to libertarianism, you're going to continue to have that brain drain from young people. I've seen it with not just my family, but many others. Mm-hmm. And injecting billions of dollars is not the answer in my perspective. And I'll finish with this. having the most well-known millionaire from the state of Vermont being a lifelong politician representing socialism, something that I see the governor, who I respect on some issues, creeping more and more towards, is not the answer. It's not going to keep.
Okay, Scott, I think we got the gist of what you were saying. Governor, your response?
Well, no, I appreciate Scott's perspective. Obviously, there's some areas of disagreement, but that's okay. I believe in our civil liberties as well. Again, we have a different approach in how to deal with that. But when we talk about, let's say, how we reacted to the pandemic, I would admit that there are other states that took a different approach than we did. But our approach was something that fit Vermont, and I believe that having the numbers that we're seeing were the envy of many in the country. We're the safest, healthiest state in the country. We have the lowest number of deaths of any state in the country. And per capita, we're number two. Hawaii is number one. And our economy is doing fairly well, I believe, in light of this. Now, it's as a result of the billions of dollars that have been injected into the economy through some of the stimulus money. But we have an opportunity again here, and we could reject the $1 billion, but I don't think that would make much sense for us. But if we take the $1 billion and invest it in the right areas, really transformative and tangible issues, and if we're transparent about it, I think that's really important. That's why I wanted a separate bill to deal with this and deal with it over 3 or 4 year period. We don't have to have the prescription to spend the money. We don't have to be prescriptive today, we can build out on this over the next 3 or 4 years. But we have to have a plan moving forward. But again, that's why we have to be transparent in how we do this, and make sure that we do it in a very strategic way and spend in areas that will give us the highest return. It's a once in a lifetime opportunity to better our state, and we can't squander it at this point in time. So, again, I respect Scott's position, and I'll continue to lead the state as best I can to the best of my ability. And I think that for the most part, because of the team and the attitude of Vermonters, we've gotten through this better than most states. So we can be proud of that. But we still have a ways to go. You know, we've got 90 days left to go. And then we'll get back to more freedom than we've had in the past.
Governor, we got this email from Cindy, who wrote us, "I know that one of your priorities has been to encourage young adults to live and contribute to our state. Have you considered helping college graduates with massive college debt in exchange for a commitment to stay in Vermont? Is there a way that you can influence loan holders also to reduce the amount of interest they earn? Is that the kind of program that perhaps some of this federal money could be used for?"
Yeah, at least, you know, there's $1.7 billion that is prescriptive going towards education, a lot of money for education, hundreds of millions of dollars for higher ed and pre-K through 12. So there's some money. And again, we haven't received all the rules on how that can be spent. But from my perspective, again, this $1 billion, that wouldn't be an area that I would focus on. I think it should be tangible. I think it should be, again, transformative. We know these are issues that we've had challenges in the past. We've had a number of administrations who have promised change in many of these areas, but haven't been able to deliver because they haven't had the resources. Well, now we have the resources, so let's not let's do this in the right way. So that's where I would spend this money. Obviously, the legislature and others might have different thoughts, but this is the plan I'm putting on the table.
Governor, we're almost out of time, but this afternoon the House is scheduled to take up an expansion of the bottle bill to include a lot of plastic water bottles, non-carbonated sports drinks, juice bottles, wine bottles for that matter. Do you support that bill?
I do not. I just think it's going to become more complicated. And I think that there are better approaches. I think having a single source recycling has been a huge, huge help. So I think we should expand upon that and do what we can there. As someone who has participated in a lot of Green Up Days, I still find lots of returnable cans and bottles on the sides of the road. So that's not going to help that situation in a big way. I don't find as many plastic water bottles as I do returnable cans and bottles. So, again, I'm opposed to it, and we'll see where it goes in the legislature. But I think there's a better approach, and I think recycling is something that we should focus on.
Well, we'll be watching many of these issues very closely in the weeks ahead. Governor Phil Scott, many thanks for taking the time to be with us today. I know your schedule these days is incredibly busy, so thank you very much.
Yeah, appreciate it, Bob. Appreciate you getting out the word about everything that we're trying to do with the pandemic, and that's been incredibly helpful. The media has been very helpful in this regard, and we're all one big team here.